Cosmo, we're in Beverly Grove in your bedroom.
That's right. We're here.
Thank you for coming on. You've done all sorts of things,
yeah.
Mostly around virtual reality
and currently
exploring consciousness in new kind of ways,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
Forever expansion of your state of being.
Yeah, that's the goal.
But Mind Show is this virtual reality experience that people play. And VRLA is an expo in mm-hmm. LA, which is kind of the world's leading expo
yeah,
in virtual
right.
reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of started that with some mates just off the cuff, right?
Yeah. VRLA began as a meetup about 4 years ago. Mm. And
2 years ago? You're time traveling now.
4 years ago in 2014.
Yeah.
And it was around the time when, the DK1, the original Oculus development kit, was first starting to become a thing.
Yeah.
And no one really knew about it. And I had been reading about it online because I was obsessed with technology. And it's like, man, none of my friends have any idea what this is, right? This is a very niche thing that not a lot of people understood or really, you know, had access to because it was just coming out, like for the average person. So that was really exciting. And I just wanted to meet other people. So I was like, all right, let's create a meetup. And well, actually I was listening to a podcast, the RevVR podcast about VR.
Mm-hmm.
And actually that was kind of the whole catalyst for, you know, a lot of kind of what my life has become today in the last 4 years was off of this seed of an idea, which is like, hey, you should start a VR meetup in your city if you don't have one. And you know, so many other crazy things have followed from that. Yeah,
crazy. And so Mind Show came after that.
Yeah, so Mind Show came after we started VRLA. So I started VRLA with a bunch of people, with Johnny, John, Adam, Jess, James, Kate, Christian, number Shelley, but so many people. Mm-hmm. But Mind Show began with one of my co-founders, Johnny Ross, who is a film, at the time he was a film director and I think commercial director actually. Mm-hmm. And he had this idea of how you could tell a story in virtual reality. And we had started VRLA together. And ultimately he asked me to join his company. Mm. And I was like, yeah, sounds cool. Because at that time as well, I was studying film production at USC in Los Angeles. So I came out here from New York City to do that. Mm. And kind of VR totally changed the whole course of my life, honestly.
Wow. Yeah, because once that caught fire, it's like it was really, you were in momentum for what you
totally
loved doing.
Yeah.
And so I'm keen about this conversation because I just watched Player One Ready, that Steven yeah. Spielberg movie
yeah.
slash whoever.
Ready Player One.
Ready Player
yeah.
One.
yeah. You said it in reverse the first time, but I didn't want to correct you. But, you know, this is your podcast, so you got to make sure, you go by the book.
Yeah, we just had Mexican together.
Yeah, or you're going to have someone, you know, coming up to you afterwards.
Man, I said on the previous podcast. I was like, oh, no. I'm bringing it up.
We got to edit that one.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it in. Or just edit the words around. So it's play up one. Ready?
The same. You could alter time and Mandela effect, you know.
Yeah, shit, that's real, right? Yeah. They got my friend in a real dark place.
Really?
The Mandela effect freaked them the fuck out. And they were just like...
It's a thing, yeah. It's apparently it is a real thing.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, there's some Bob Marley songs and stuff that are meant to be got warped.
Yeah, what is going on with that?
To be honest, I'm not ready to get indulged in
yeah,
it because
it's a lot to process.
Yeah. And I often find some things that are too bewildering can't fundamentally be true.
Hmm. Really? I think that's a sort of a small minded sort of perspective.
Oh, I'm talking about the sense of the thing.
You can't imagine it.
The mechanics of nature are very simple.
Okay.
Creation, maintenance, destruction. Like we can say that pretty much everything comes down to that. There's creation, then something's maintained, then it's destroyed. That's like a very simple mechanic makes sense.
Sure.
You can see
that,
everywhere.
I like the way you distilled that. That was cool.
So that's what I mean by that. Is things start getting too convoluted. But anyway, there's obviously cases where that makes sense. But anyway, point is, that movie is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And made me realize that our social media interactions are actually a lot like a primitive form of
Absolutely.
Virtual reality.
Yeah, for sure.
Like our profile pictures, our avatar. Yeah.
And why did Facebook acquire Oculus? It's because they want to create that experience for people. And what if we're already in a kind of biological version of that?
whatever in a biological version of it. Well, it kind of is, right? This is a, you're an avatar. You're you're something that I'm experiencing through my brain.
Right.
Deceiving you.
Yeah, our avatars.
And when you do, when you experience psychedelics, like you said before, I like that analogy. Can you give us that again about the Matrix?
Yeah. What was I saying about
that? You're saying how, our experience of reality, once you kind of go deeper on acid.
Yeah. So there's a, you can live your life in so many different levels of magnification or different layers of existence, right? And there's like the one reality of us talking to each other here in this room, and that's like the kind of the default reality that we all share together. But then there's so many other versions of it up and down a spectrum of possibility and experience, mm-hmm. where you start to see how everything is kind of energy shaped and molded into a particular form to give you a certain experience. Mm-hmm. But ultimately all of that is, you know, consciousness. It's intelligent energy. And you can start to play with that once you realize what is going on, that this reality isn't actually solid.
Mm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really important fundamental thing that we take for granted, that we're taught in school, but it's not true.
So one little, because I like the way you described it as a matrix, and then you can see the nodes in the matrix.
Sure.
Like, so once you drop into that expanded state of consciousness, you actually see that it's all interconnected. And mm-hmm. can you describe that node situation?
Sure. Yeah. So it's like you can choose to see a person on the level of just, oh, they're this body wearing these these clothes, and they have this particular way they look, and I feel a certain way because of that. But you can also, you know, see the kind of underlying soul essence, or the energy that makes up who they are. And when you see people on that level, knowing what our true identity is, you start to treat everyone and everything with much more compassion, because you realize it's the same energy that you share together.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. It's crazy. It's crazy. And I think when you start
experiencing... It is crazy.
Yeah, it's...
But the ego can't handle that. That's death.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. It's this construct that we've built over the years, and like having a sense of security about what our place in the world. But as soon as you kind of...
But notice though that you are going like this unconsciously. That's right where it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly where we are. you know?
Beautiful place.
But you weren't... See, as a subconscious thing.
I wasn't touching my dick when I was feeling it. Touching my hair. Yeah, it's true. It's the heart space. So to me, this whole area of virtual reality, since watching Ready Player One, kind of blew my brain. And we met previous to that, so I kind of wanted to
totally
reconnect about your expertise in the area of where you think virtual reality is going.
Sure.
How far off we are before we're experiencing these kind of avatars. Although I want to go back down the psychedelic thing and think about this is a virtual reality thing.
Well,
now, because as you're saying that, I was like, fuck, you are an avatar,
right?
I'm receiving
well, it's a game.
It feels like some sort of a simulation, doesn't it?
It is a game.
I reckon we could get ourselves just tripping out right now on absolute no psychedelics or influence of drugs, and just get to a place where like, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, it is you can trip yourself out the more you really think about it, because it's like, you know, in a game, you have an environment, and you have your characters, and you have your goals and props and stuff. And in a way, we've kind of created all those core elements inside of Mindshow.
Mm.
In Mindshow, what you can do is you can essentially... Sorry, I feel like there's a squeaking, this subtle squeaking that might be...
It's all right. We're pretty quiet on the mics.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So in Mindshow, you can create interactive cartoons by puppeteering virtual cartoon characters with your body and voice.
Sick.
So we use the HTC Vive, and you can go and download this for free on Steam. If you have a PC and this headset, and essentially you get to pick an environment, you get to pick your characters, your props, and then kind of the main part of it is animating and essentially puppeteering these characters by embodying them, by entering you know, inside of their essence, and you have their hands, and you can control their facial expressions.
Incredible.
And so you can create whole stories and scenes like this just by yourself. So essentially collapses, you know, multiple roles that we've grown accustomed to on like a movie set, for example, where you have, you know, the writer, the producer, the director, the cameraman, all these different roles. And now one person can do all of that for free, you know, in their own living room. Right. So it's essentially kind of like a motion capture studio in your living room.
Wow.
And on top of that, so you can create these things and then you can actually share them to a network of other, shows, community of people that are creating these new kinds of interactive media.
Yeah.
And you can go watch them, you can go download them, and you can, you know, the core part of it as well is because it's inside of a computer, because it's totally malleable, you can remix and change the story and share that back. So it's this kind of infinitely replayable interdimensional TV, I guess.
That is fucking mind-blowing. Not a mind-blowing thing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And so you think as the avatars become more and more sophisticated, it will become more and more desirable to be in that reality?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That is a very good question. The short answer is yes, but it's really about like, what are we doing here, like outside of that virtual reality
avatar is rad.
Yeah. Well, it's like we take for granted how amazing this world and this reality and this body is. Huh. It's really very advanced technology. But because we are it, or we believe we are it rather, we're so used to this sense, this experience of being here that we don't think of it because it's staring us right in the face. But it's like people talk about like how excited they are when, you know, graphics get really good and it's indistinguishable from real life. But the subtext in there is that real life is fucking crazy and amazing, right? So it's like we're trying to match something that is already so far more complex than kind of what meets the eye, right?
Yes.
I was having this conversation actually with Android Jones, this visionary artist who actually made this amazing this mural or this canvas back here.
Right.
And he's really one of my favorite artists. He does this app called he's doing VR too, which actually you should look into.
VR's like
oh
that.
Yeah, that'd he figured amazing. Out a way to essentially recreate his amazing style inside of virtual reality with an app called Microdose.
Wow. Yeah.
So cool name. But anyway, what we were saying,
they're kind of psychedelic visuals
for people, very psychedelic. So we were saying there's this idea of trying to recreate this physical reality inside of a virtual world, inside of, you know, digital reality, right? And everyone's like, okay, we're trying to get to this level of graphical fidelity, right? And we're clearly fast approaching a level where those are indistinguishable. But let's not underestimate what else is happening to generate that one aspect of reality, right? On an energetic level, it's not just like the way it looks. It's the emotion. There's the emotional field, right? There's the thought fields. There's so much, reality is so much more complex than just like what we perceive with our eyes, right?
What's fucking baffling to me is just as you're talking, is like this thing that human beings are evolving so much that they're dropping their bodies, not worrying about their bodies, and wanting to create a reality where it's limitless, like the Oasis in that movie. But because we're not happy, satisfied with our already highly sophisticated experience.
Yeah. So this hits on a very deep and important thing for people to consider, which is the difference between biological ascension and technological ascension, right? And so the reality that companies like Facebook and Oculus and just virtual reality companies in general, I suppose, right? It's this very like transhumanist perspective where it's like, oh, we're going to upload our consciousness We're going to make that reality as indistinguishable from this reality as possible. Mm-hmm. And we're going to live forever inside of these virtual worlds, which is so misguided because they don't realize that we already live forever, that we're already eternal beings, infinite beings, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so it's this fear of death that is driving us towards this place in technology that is not really the right direction. And when you think of, like, you know, on the other hand, when we talk about, like, biological ascension, it's like this idea that we will transcend this human form into something completely new mm. without the use of technology. Mm. And so that's an interesting thing that I've kind of been, you know, thinking about for you know, the past few years.
Where's your latest thought pattern of it? What's the tip of the unknown?
You know, I'm still obsessed with technology. I love technology. And for a while, most of my life was like technology as a religion almost in a way where it's just like, yeah, it's like, yeah, we're going to go into VR and everything's going to be amazing in there because we can do whatever we want.
Mm.
Right. But it was really, it's coming when you realize that you don't need a headset to have virtual reality, that everything changes. And virtual reality is still an amazing technology, and we're using it in an amazing way to allow people to express their creativity.
The human brain's a pretty good technology.
Absolutely. But you can see with your eyes closed, right? Like, you don't need, you can have all kinds of crazy experiences with lucid dreaming, for example,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's another important thing to consider, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And particularly when innovating technology is to have this sense of the spirit, I guess, in our biological virtual experience. Because, I mean, one thing I was thinking about with, and you can, so you, when you get take plant medicines or kind of psychedelics, you kind of have this experience of reality that's unified, that's everyone has a subjective sure. experience of mm-hmm. an objective truth.
Yeah. For sure. I've experienced that directly a number of times.
Mm.
It's like realizing that we're all different, we're all wearing different masks over the same thing, like connected to the same thing.
Yep.
But it's when we're so deeply identified with that mask, with that persona, right? Like persona, like person, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we're trapped in the ego, which can seem very powerful, but it's ultimately just an illusion.
It's just divisive, I suppose. Yeah. More than that, I would say that it's just one is not experiencing the full dimensions of reality. You know, totally. Like, so it's actually more of a bummer if someone's just like hyperlogical and only believes the very things that they perceive. And but we're in this, for me, it's just like a continuum of expansion. So mm-hmm. if someone's in that state, then someone else is in this state. We're forever expanding. We're totally. Like, in the same way, you know, like the universe itself is forever expanding. Mm-hmm. Again, that's what I feel like when you draw parallels in nature as to what's occurring in our own localized experience of consciousness, that's when you see truths. Mm-hmm. That's when you're like, shit rotates around an energy force like the sun.
Totally. Yeah, the fractal nature of reality is pretty fascinating when it's like you realize that the same pattern in your lungs is the one in the blood, in the trees, in the ice, in the planets, in the galaxies. It's like, what is that? Like, how's that, where does that come from? Who codes those laws, those rules? You know, who's the programmer of that? Us. I think it's us.
So the collective supreme intelligence of the universe.
Well, it's like there's higher and lower versions of ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So I would imagine that reality is just kind of like nested shells, like those Russian nesting dolls of higher and higher layers or of understanding of like what reality actually is.
Mm.
And yeah, I don't know. We saw there's this crazy, this movie in a dome at this event that was like kind of portraying the different dimensions. And it was like, whoa, that was a lot.
why?
Well, it started from, yeah, it's a little hard to kind of describe because it was a very visual experience, very kind of immersive experience, but it started from the very like depths of the dimensions where it's like pure, like evil and like chaos and like scary, fearful. And then like progressing up through like different layers of consciousness to then like you get to the human level and then you get to like the more like spiritual levels. And it's just like, whoa, like all these different, it's hard to describe like the different, you know, I guess deities or entities of different dreamers of the layer beneath it, I guess, in a way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Kind of like, I guess, Inception.
Yeah. There's a sequence.
Yeah.
Of expansion or the sequence of sophistication, greater sophistication. Right.
And it's all happening at the same time though, because there's no time.
Like, yeah, exactly. That's what's beautiful and powerful and wonderful to realize. And it's, and you have direct experiences where that's true as well. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was thinking about the sun the other day when I was enjoying myself and the sun to me just blew my tits off in the sense that, holy fuck, this being, this intelligence has drawn into the light, has created life around it.
Sure.
Everything that's rotating, including our fucking awareness of it. It's amazing.
Right. And it is a being, and so are the planets. And what's so surreal about like living in cities for most of my life is you can't see the stars. You can see a few, but you really can't see the stars. And then, you know, I went to Joshua Tree like a month or so ago and finally, you know, saw more stars and it's like, oh yeah, amazing. Like that's up there. That's there. And that's so important to have that in your consciousness. But we cut ourselves off from that when we live in big cities, like something like 50% of the world or some crazy percentage of the world lives in cities and they can't see the stars. Like what effect has that had on our connection to everything else in the universe? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. But to me, what it says is that we're creating this virtual reality for our human experience. That's very engineered.
And for sure.
It's like a shitty virtual reality because it's not as intelligent as nature.
Absolutely.
Fucking concrete.
Well, that is, that's a really good, I had a weird experience or realization similar to that when I was kind of just walking on the street in the sidewalk and then seeing the distance, kind of in the far distance down the street, you know, the mountain and the kind of as the backdrop of Los Angeles, which is cool. We have mountains, right? And then kind of comparing that boundary of where that mountain was with where does the city begin, right? And then it was almost like envisioning the city as a prison. But when you're inside of the prison, you don't really realize that you're in something that is kind of trapping you, because it's this whole, and it is like a matrix is what you're talking about. It's like when the human mind is like when it's put inside of this like place and it's requires money to pay for the things it needs, then it really is this never ending loop and cycle of seeking out something that you perpetually need to you know, go on living, right?
It's like, yeah, it's the, it kind of ties into that quote, like the greatest ideologies are the ones that people aren't aware that they are ideologies. Sure. And that's what our culture is. It's a cult like that, because it's very much, I mean, and then that's why I think plant medicine, psychedelics is so fantastic for this stuff, because it, or meditation, I'd probably promote as the number one most sustainable way. I mean, psychedelics are sustainable. I think you just need to really, I think it's on that Tim Ferriss podcast, episode 66 of Tim Ferriss, where that really great expert, sorry, I just went about five different D routes on it, but he talks about the integration is the only times people have bad experiences on psychedelics is when they don't integrate their learnings.
Interesting.
And so he sees it like, what was the analogy? It's something like, I can't remember, but it's along the lines of not having time to integrate, which is the obvious thing, but he used a really great analogy. You know, something like turning a page and then reading the whole thing before you turn the next page. So you can kind of embed all the learnings into your actual life.
Right. That is, that is a challenging thing is how do you integrate, right? Because you can have these crazy experiences, but then what do you take from that practically back into your life?
Yes.
And so that's a very important step.
It's very important. And I think that's the whole point of the experience. That's what I find, at least, is when I have an experience, and particularly ones that I've had on meditating, very DMT-like experiences, just from dropping deep into meditation. And those experiences, the only thing I came away feeling is, right, I need to go integrate this. This is all I was, the only sole reason I was shown, given that experience, because like a gift, which is what it felt like, because it came spontaneously. It's like, there's nothing more I can do with that experience than go integrate it now, because what else can I do with it? Talk about it, say that it happened.
Yeah, that's the silly thing about psychedelics is like, it's very challenging and almost silly to try and describe it to people.
It's bewildering as fuck if you haven't had a similar experience.
Right. Yeah.
But tell me some about yours.
Yeah, I mean every time I do it, I take something new away from it.
Right.
It's always something different and surprising, but I don't know, recently just coming to realize that this life is a game. And we're here, you know, we play by the rules, but we can also change those rules because we created them in the first place. So so that's something that I've been, you know, wrestling with recently.
It's a big one, dude. Yeah. Because if you talk about it like that, the rules, what's the rules that you inherited from previous people, right, previous men and women that have created them? And so it reminds me of this thing that Evelyn, our mutual friend who's on a previous podcast, told me, is that the best way to convince people of a lie is to tell it again and again over generations and generations, and it becomes truth. And
wow,
that freaked the fuck out of me.
That is pretty scary. Right, there's a lot of things we take for granted about this reality that we believe to be true that are complete lies. Like money is real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's real. We'll break that down. Like, it's real within a certain aspect of...
Yeah, it's like real, and I can take out a dollar bill and show it to you.
Yeah.
Right? It's as real as my hands are real, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the Federal Reserve prints money out of thin air from nothing. It's not backed by anything. And then they can charge interest on it. And it makes it an impossibility that we could ever pay back.
It's a total game.
All of the money that was loaned. So it creates a situation where we're perpetually, you know, trying to pay off our debt, but we can't ever climb out of it. And it's just a huge scam.
Sad. Makes me sad.
Yeah. Right. So then what, right?
Not a gear change to when I saw my hand expanding when I was... I'm gonna gear change to, you know, have you ever looked at your hand when you're on mushrooms or LSD?
Sure.
And sometimes it's translucent, right? Sometimes you can see through it.
I've not quite seen that yet.
Right. So I could see the bones in between. Whoa. My hand. And then another time, more recently, it was warping and getting very, very large, like a big glove, big fleshy glove, and kind of bending. Tell me what you think that experience is. Is that because there's some experiences on psychedelics where you're like, I'm perceiving a different dimension. Like, it unlocks your brain. And it's a key to your brain that the neuroscientists say that expands more capability in your brain. But is that just my... Am I seeing...
Yeah. What is that? How does that work? It's all imagination. We're creating a reality all the time through our imagination. So, it's like when you take something that alters your perception of consciousness, it's changing kind of the rate at which you perceive reality and the way that you perceive reality, right? So it's not like what you're looking at doesn't exist. It's just that your mind is now seeing what's already there that you couldn't see before. That's what I think is so interesting about it.
What's refracting or bending it or something? Bending light, because it's all light that's coming into my eyes.
Yeah.
And then my brain's perceiving that light. Mm-hmm. and painting a picture of what the light has shown the eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere you're running this fun kind of software by taking
totally
acid.
Yeah. So honestly, like, I'm not really an expert on this, but it is something that I'm really fascinated by and mm-hmm. have, you know, done a little bit of research on.
Mm.
What's interesting about it is it's revealing to you a reality that exists there all the time, but we're ordinarily not tuned into it. And so you're able to tune into higher, when you're able to tune into higher frequencies, you can kind of see into the matrix of reality a little bit deeper.
Fucking weird. It's so weird. Yeah. Think about it.
Well, reality, I mean, yeah, it is a weird sort of experience, but where I was going with that train of thought is like realizing, having an appreciation of how much your brain and body is modulating your experience of reality to a very, very extreme end where you can very effectively navigate through this world in conversation. When you're walking down the street, you can have thoughts and create all kinds of art and technology and amazing things in this world. And you can do that with this great, you know, adaptability. But we're very rarely consciously aware of all the little aspects that have to come together to enable that experience. Mm. So it's having a deeper appreciation of that, I think, is really awesome.
Yes. And that's what you're doing when you have these expanded states of consciousness, is that you're realizing, it gives you perspective for one, so you can witness what's going on, but it also gives you a direct experience with these other dimensions. And when you said that we're tapping into the other dimensions, that really blew my fucking brain, because I was like, why do we all see very similar things in these states of consciousness? Yeah, you know, like
shared virtual reality.
Yeah. It must be going on all the time. Like I shut my eyes and I was gone for probably what was 2 seconds, but my friend said it was 2 seconds of real time, lineal time.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like I was there for about 5 to 10 minutes.
Mm.
And it was just this vortex, fractal vortex of like Egyptian numerology and eyes and purple and gold spiraling deep, 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 deep down. And like people have some very similar visuals.
Sure.
Like, what the fuck are we tuning into? What is this dimension of reality?
I don't know. But yeah, it is perplexing. But even more perplexing is like the world right now, you know, like not even going into those areas, right? Like everything is pretty weird when you really think about it. It's just, we're just convincing ourselves that it's normal.
Yes.
You know, we've convinced ourselves of so many things that are supposed to be normal, but they're really complete bullshit.
So a hypothetical then could be if like 50 people in a room created a new isolated environment that created the new world of reality that was entirely tripping constantly on mushrooms.
Yeah.
The way that I'd be fascinated. I mean, it's a very dangerous experiment, but I'd be fascinated because I don't know about the sustainability of it and if the upgrade's too rapid for the nervous system to maintain that state of consciousness. But for example, I'm just saying as a case study, if that was the case, how would those 50 people start interacting with each other? Mm. What kind of community would they build? Totally. How would they talk to each other? What would they paint like? To print out this dimension that they're now continually attuned with.
It would be a totally different world and not one that I can necessarily predict at all what that could be like. But, you know, there's the stoned ape theory, which is pretty fascinating, which is, I think, Terence McKenna was talking about how he believes that the reason humans evolved to what we are today was because we were eating, you know, these essentially psychedelic mushrooms off the cow dung, and that expanded our consciousness.
Mm.
And you can, you know, kind of see how that might be plausible. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but
it's an interesting theory as well, because it's backed by the proposition that our bodies come out of the womb early, because that's why we can't walk straight away, for instance. Mm. Like a lot of other animals, when they come out of the womb, they can walk. I mean, mainly because they need to as well, and we might not need to. But point is, our brains have got so big so quickly in the evolutionary scheme of things that the body needs to eject the baby before the brain gets too big and the body can't come out.
Mm.
Which kind of reinforces the stoned ape theory, because psilocybin mushrooms create neurogenesis, so your brain grows in size rapidly, apparently.
That's cool.
So cool. Also, Dennis McKenna, as you're talking intergalactic cosmic things, I think I read this, The Mushroom Grows Guide or something, and it had the preface was his idea that mushrooms were talking to him a lot about, I want humans to create interplanetary space travel. So the mushrooms told him, hey, you need to create some interplanetary space travel so you can take me to another planet, because this planet isn't going to last that long, and you need to take me somewhere else to another planet. So that's the purpose of human beings, is to... he also said...
Wait, where was this?
This is Dennis McKenna's...
Dennis McKenna.
Relationship.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, Terrence.
Okay.
Dennis is his brother.
Yeah.
And that kind of... I mean, this guy was someone that was tripping dicks for a long time.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating.
But from the point of view of that case study we talked about a minute ago, of a scenario where everyone's on the same different dimension of operating, that could be happening in other galaxies.
Sure, with it other is. Beings. It absolutely, that's a reality. I mean, that used to be our reality, right? You talk about like the fall of man and the Garden of Eden. Apparently, was like a real experience for people where we lived in just a world where we were in perfect connection to God. And we could, communicate with each other without, misunderstanding each other.
Mm.
And, apparently even, could communicate with nature, with the trees and the water and the minerals and all of that. And it's kind of funny, because like, if that's true, and to talk about it like this thing that was in the past that maybe might have happened, we might have had this ability, like, boy, how far we've come, or fallen in a way, I guess.
That's a great question. Yeah. What do you think we've done? Because evolution has to be taking place, because that's nature.
Sure. Yeah, I believe evolution is a thing for sure. I also believe that there's been several other advanced civilizations on the earth prior to this one, right? Like, we're led to believe that we're the most advanced we've ever been, but that's also, a huge lie.
We are in ways, but we're not in other ways.
We're advanced in ways, but the most advanced is just not true. Mm.
So what's your definition of advanced?
Being an intergalactic civilization that doesn't create war, that lives in unity and love with each other, that doesn't have money, that I would consider advanced. Yeah, we're not there. Mm. We're not there yet.
Mm. And what's your have you had any direct downloads? Direct experiences with the supreme intelligence of everythingness that have communicated with you what's going on in terms of, for the example, the Egyptian civilization, or...
I wish. No. No, I mean, I have experiences, but not really at that level.
Hmm. Because that's what something Evelyn and I were talking about on the previous podcast, is discerning the difference between your imagination in those situations and a direct
download. Well, it's all download. But it's all the imagination.
I personally can distinguish a difference.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes I'm just downloading, I'm channeling knowledge.
Right. But where is that coming from, though?
Source of everything.
Okay. But how do you know that?
It's got a tone to it. It's got a particular flavor to it.
Mm.
It's all known, all seeing. It's got a calm, all loving, supreme energy that doesn't speak like my ego speaks, doesn't speak like my imagination speaks. Sure, it filters through my imagination somewhat to construct itself as an idea, but I can very much determine the difference between that, like effortless, and when I'm like, oh, what if this was the case? Oh, that is the case. This could be where I convince myself of a reality.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference between, having information and experiencing that as reality, right?
Yeah.
And when you get to experience ideas that you've had about life, that's a really profound thing.
Mm.
When you can really, for example, you hear about how we're all connected, but then when you feel that and you know that,
yes,
that's like, okay,
exactly,
great. Now I can live that and promote that in the world, and everyone can express that in their own way.
Exactly. And that's something, the most profound time I had was when I was on my meditation on my 30th birthday, where I felt a direct experience of I am everything across all time, all space. I am all of it. And it was an embodiment of that. So my body felt like it was...
Wow. That's amazing.
And I had this tingling sense going up and down, like...
Wow.
And it lasted about 2 minutes. And in my mind's eye, my whole body was white with a blue tinge around it. But that for me is an example of embodying.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Having an embodying.
It's pretty amazing.
A knowingness of totally. I am everything and everything is connected. And that was after asking God to give me an objective truth in through experience of what it is. And that's what I was given.
So was it like an experience of like feeling yourself as the universe, or like what I'm getting the image of sort of like a galaxy almost.
I think it was everything. So it was just white, all the light, but also in later experiences, I realized it was all the darkness as well. And the darkness is super necessary in order for creation to come back into primary, i.e. destruction needs to take place in order to remove irrelevancies. But initially at the source experience, it was just nothing, as simple as that. I am everything. And
it's a weird paradox though, isn't it?
What's that?
How nothing can be everything at the same time.
Yes. And that's the difference between Taoism, the nothingness, and Vedism, and the everythingness. They call it, and then quantum physics, they call it the unified field. But all three of those things are talking about the same thing, that quantum shit.
Yeah, totally.
Which I suppose is just, it's the building blocks of everything, of existence.
Nassim Haramein talks about this, the micro fluctuations in of energy. It's like it's like little bits of oscillating energy that arrange themselves in a particular pattern.
They come together.
Are you familiar with him?
What's his name again?
Nassim Haramein.
Yes, I saw his documentary. What's it called?
Yeah. The Connected Universe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
There you go. So that's where he talks about that. Definitely check that out if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, the visuals in that are pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. And so in a utopian environment, with your businesses aside, what would you see as virtual reality? How would you see virtual reality serving humanity?
Sure. Yeah, that's a really good question. So really, technology is like an extension of ourselves, right? So as long as we're able to use it in a way that promotes freedom rather than further enslavement, I think that is what's necessary for it to be used in a responsible way. Mm. And I guess any technology, right? So for example, like if you think about the internet, like, it's simultaneously this most amazing invention that has given, humanity so many important things, like the ability to listen to music wherever you want or communicate with your friends and family instantly from around the world, and so many other amazing use cases, businesses, etc. But at the same time, it's been used for censorship and for creating all kinds of hateful, negative, bullying types of behavior and starting to erode, you know, the social dynamics here outside of the internet, like you were discussing, you know, with me earlier. And so VR can be leveraged according to whatever the person wants to do with it, right? And so it's really a reflection of our collective consciousness. And so, for example, if you look at, you know, all the top selling games on Steam right now for VR, the majority of them, like 70-80%, are first person shooters, or they're violent in some other way. And there's nothing, I guess, there's nothing really inherently wrong with that. Like I play like Black Ops, like when I was like in high school, like all the time, like FPSs, like they're great. But it's like, man, do we really need more shooters like in the world? Is that really, we just need, like, there's, the world isn't violent enough. Like we need to simulate it in our homes where we're safe from physical violence. Right. For the most part, luckily. Right. So that's a weird, it's a weird thing. Right. And we like watch all these simulations of dramas and on TV, but because we don't think we have enough of that in our lives. And so what was I getting at? Like, so VR can be a tool for liberation or further enslavement. And it's up to us to create whatever, you know, future world we want to live in, right? So like there's this very real dystopian future that, you know, we can create if we want that, you know, as portrayed in Ready Player One. I talked about this in my speech at, you know, the last VRLA. Or, you know, there's also great examples today of VR being used in education and allowing people to express their creativity, not just with Mindshow, but with Tilbrush and Medium and all kinds of other artistic tools. So, yeah, I mean, it's really our responsibility to create applications for this technology that expand our consciousness and promote the right values instead of just, you know, being just a mindless technology.
So interesting. It's like this thing of, it's almost like the technology we create prints out where we're at inside ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so of course it's the most popular thing because everyone's feeling divisive and loves war.
Yeah.
It seems.
Well, it's a reflection. The outer world is a reflection of the inner world, but really the inner and the outer are the same thing.
Yep.
Right.
I just think it starts from the inner and it prints out.
Exactly.
Consciousness precedes matter.
But the whole problem is that we're all collectively so focused on what's out here and completely neglecting what's in here, right? So things like Deepak Chopra had a great quote where it's like, our technology has far advanced past our spirituality. Right, our evolution in those respective areas, where we can bomb people with great precision because we've invested time and money into tools of war, and yet, you know, most people don't meditate, for example, or any number of other, you know, spiritual practices. So that's a real problem.
So, and then it begs the question, how do you transition people to greater states of consciousness or more expanded states of consciousness without just, like, for example, we take away the machine gun, give them a little pistol, take away the pistol, give them a water gun, you know, like, how do you transition that?
That's
shift?
A great question. I think...
Or facilitate that transition, should I say?
Yeah, so we need to create a society where owning weapons is unthinkable. Right, because we're trapped in this mindset of having to protect ourselves because there is danger in the world. There are people that are psychotic because they are not getting the support they need from our society because we cast people out on the street and we just kind of live with that every day, and that's our reality, right? And so it's like we're spending all this money to create these like simulations of reality for not just for VR, but, you know, TV and movies. And obviously like entertainment has value. Like Mindshow is primarily an entertainment tool, but then it's like, you look at what's going on in the world and it's just our values collectively are just screwed up because we're kind of put in a position where we have to do things for money that we wouldn't do otherwise.
So true.
Yeah.
We're so convinced.
Yeah. So it's a huge scam that we're scamming ourselves.
Yeah. But I think the thing on money is just like money in itself, I feel like is neutral. It's just a tool. It's a function.
Mm.
It's the awareness, right. the attention we give it.
I agree. And it also, but it inherently creates classism, right? Mm. So it's like, you have more money than me. I have more money than you. Like it divides us. Right. I mean, we're all equal. We're all connected. We're all this one thing somehow. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, oh, this person has more money and they could afford this lifestyle.
Yes, true. It creates
a hierarchy.
There's a hierarchy.
Hierarchy is artificial.
As opposed to people just falling into their truest selves and get that collectively working out.
So if you think about it, like there's this energy of people not clogged energy of people not doing what they really truly are passionate about because they're forced to drive for Uber or Lyft or Chipotle or be a security guard or whatnot because they need to pay bills. And I'm sure there's things they'd rather be doing, right? And I'm sure there's things we'd rather be doing, right? And you know, it's like I'm very, very fortunate to like be getting paid for to do something that I feel is really important and can help the world, but at the same time recognizing that there's probably even more that I could be doing. There's more that we collectively could be doing as well to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, those are the things I think about.
Yeah. I think what you're doing, it's the most important thing is your mindset in what you're doing. And I think that applies to anyone and whatever their job is, if they're an Uber driver, bodyguard, security person. Like it's how you bring yourself more than the function of what you do.
Totally.
And I think that's what you're saying is like, it's that's what I see in you is the most important thing in terms of evolving with the VR technology is your mindset.
Mm-hmm. That's been very important. Yeah. We've given our power away. We think that these people in suits in the banks and the government are gods.
Mm. Oh, I certainly don't, but some people do.
Exactly. Well, that's the issue.
Weird, yeah.
That's the issue though.
Yeah.
And so what I was getting at earlier though is like, so there's this pent up energy, that is being blocked because we're not expressing our true selves, right? Whatever we're meant to, whatever that might be, which is unique for everyone, which is what's so cool about it, even though we're the same thing, right?
Mm.
So, but if you allow people to do what they really want to do in a world without money, then theoretically, the level of innovation and collaboration would be completely unimaginable.
Totally. It'd be amazing.
Because right now it's like, oh, I want to build the best rocket available, for example. And then you have to pay to go to school. You have to pay for all the materials. You can't use the best materials because the best materials are too expensive. And the rockets, that's not really a great example, but you can apply that to anything you might want to achieve in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, we had to raise a bunch of money to do Mindshow, and that was a huge, long process. It took a year out of our lives, and we learned a lot, and it was amazing. We were very fortunate and lucky to have been able to do that and be where we are today because we raised some money, right? But, like, what if you could live in a world where you had an idea and you got to work with people and no one needed to get paid for that, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, but what would the utopia look like? I suppose it's something like akin to Burning Man, where everyone just gives what they can give and everyone looks after each other.
Yeah. So these are the things I've been thinking a lot about recently. That's why I guess I'm kind of ranting about it.
can you see a practical
construction
of it?
Yeah. So So there's a few ideas out there. There's one is called a resource-based economy, which is, you know, there's no money, but essentially it's, you know, it's exactly what it sounds like. And then there's, this idea of Ubuntu contributionism, which, Michael Tellinger helped start, which has also been really interesting to me recently, where it's based on these community projects and you essentially contribute a certain number of hours per week to a community project and everything else is, you have access to for free. Now, honestly, the details of all these, I'm still researching and still learning about. They're really just kind of fascinating to me. But yeah.
Cause I think we could, I mean, there's two ways to revolution, burn it all down and create a new one. What I see is practically a bit better is people create a new system. So the old ones become irrelevant. Yes.
Absolutely. That's key.
Or which is happens in, like, for example, with My Vote, which MIVOTE have created this democratic voting structure that is so much more intelligent and true to democracy than anything that's going around at the moment. So it's getting so much attention and blowing up, and therefore it will eventually render old voting systems irrelevant.
That's really interesting. Yeah. The critical thing that Michael Tellinger points out is that we need to create an alternative to the system that is so clearly better for people that it's the natural alternative that we will transition to without fighting or having a conflict.
Exactly.
So when you're in conflict, that's when they bring the military and they use their guns and their force.
But so it needs to work be intelligent as fuck.
Yeah.
Integrated into system somewhere. I also feel like with stuff like money, we could be doing shit a lot smarter just by the government or the administration of countries or the economy, the economic administration, just organizing the sharing of money in a way that was just fucking ethical, you know,
well,
for a start.
The problem, a good start. I mean, that's absolutely a place we could start is, while we still have money, we could be spending it on things that actually help people instead of killing people. That would be nice. But yeah, or, you know, I think people would feel better about paying taxes if it was spent in the right places on things that would actually help our society. But instead, it's not really at all.
So it's because our society has been constructed in such a way that people are entirely disenfranchised and plugged into it so much that they don't feel any power anyway.
Right. Well, all of it can seem rather perplexing logically, right? Like, how is this going on, right? It doesn't really make any sense. But it starts to make more sense when you realize that it's really the world is controlled by psychopaths, right? Like, people that don't have any empathy. So if you don't have any empathy, you are okay with bombing people and screwing people out of billions of dollars and taking people's homes and allowing homelessness and poverty and hunger and all these horrible things to exist, right? Because people like us that do care for our fellow people, like, we can't really rationalize that.
Yeah, it's exactly what's going on. It's wild.
Yeah. So our world is kind of slowly being hijacked by this, like, very, very small group of people, and we're all just kind of like, okay, please. Or there are people that are saying, no, fuck this. Like, that's not okay. But for the most part, it's like we're kind of sheep just walking off, you know, the cliff. But it's like, who is really, what is it going to take for enough of us to kind of look up a little bit and realize that we're falling off a cliff and be like, hey guys, like, let's turn, this is not good. Like, let's turn the other way.
And it'll take a bunch, like any pioneer, right? It takes a bunch of people that end up getting knocked off.
Right.
Before shit happens.
Yeah, that's the most frustrating part about it is, I think the truth is that it takes something really bad for us to really get our shit together, right? Like we can procrastinate and procrastinate and procrastinate, and then we let some catastrophe happen, whatever that might be, and it's like, okay, then we create the regulation, right?
It's just crazy to me that, again, there's two cases of people, and I won't be specific in their fields or anything, but I've had met in the last 6 months differently, and they've got high security around them because of the innovation that they're doing, threatens two big different industries, but essentially corporations that would benefit massively for them not their inventions non-existent. Imagine that to me just begged the question, imagine if we wanted the fucking best for everyone and how much innovation would be popping up. And this is kind of come back to that thing we were saying before, like how sophisticated we would be as a civilization if everyone just fucking had each other's backs and wanted the best for everyone.
Yeah, well, the truth is that most of us do. Most of us really do.
That's true.
But what is happening is this reality, this world, this country, there's a parasite and it's siphoning our energy into a very small group of people.
Yep.
And poisoning the whole planet and poisoning the environment. And it's hijacked. It's like a mental virus.
Yep.
And it's spreading. So what do you do about that? I don't know.
Disobey.
That's part of it for sure. I mean, there's awareness. Awareness is one thing, but awareness itself is not going to change anything. You need action, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And so, but what's crazy about it is everyone is so distracted in the rat race of trying to survive because we need this money thing that doing the action is really tough to make hard decisions.
Yeah. But there are good people with lots of money, putting lots of money into good things as well. That's what I'm realizing more.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not all dystopic at all, at all. There are people doing amazing things for sure with good intentions, but there doesn't seem to be enough.
We need to create a news source that just promotes all of it. And then our world will be celebrating these progressive changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's really about like, what are our values, right? And if you look at the president that we voted for, it's really just a reflection of our values. It's like, oh, we like this billionaire. We think a businessman can, you know, effectively operate this country because America's a business, right? Government's a business. Yeah. No, wrong.
It's a true representation of what's really going on.
You know, it's just the pure kind of manifestation of the ego, the collective ego. Right. So I think what's interesting about Trump is he's here to kind of show us how not to be and what not to do and what not to say. And so we can take that and learn from that and move forward. But it's up to us to actually do the learning.
When you say ego, define what ego means to you.
It's the belief that you are separate from everyone else and everything else, that you're so caught up in this physical reality that you can't see past it. That you are completely misidentified with your body and your status in society. And it's like kind of like this vortex of energy. And when it has you in its grips, it can be very difficult to get out of that. But you can, it's possible. And it's not like I walk around without one. That's like, you know, I think we all have that challenge. We all have that struggle.
Mm.
But if we could all live without our egos for a day, I think that would be a quite an experience for us.
Do you think the ego in itself is actually just a neutral window through which our localized field of consciousness mm-hmm. is expressed?
In that sense,
the ego isn't any, the only flavor it holds is a printout of the severity of one's conditioning.
That's a good point. Well, what's interesting, you know, Alan Watts talks about this a lot.
Mm.
And he says, and same with Krishnamurti, and they talk about how you can't be in conflict with the ego. You can't fight against it because it doesn't exist to begin with. So when you are in conflict, when you're trying to dissolve your ego, right, that reinforces the ego because it inherently doesn't exist, but now you're trying to go against it. And so that's creating it from nothing.
See, that to me is in my personal witnessing of what you just said, to me, it sounds like overcomplicating, over-intellectualizing
mm-hmm.
it. Because to me, in my experience, I feel like the ego is just a neutral shop window of your body.
Mm.
So it in itself is
completely
neutral. And so whatever I fill my ego with is like cosmic intelligence or money intelligence, or, you know, whatever I put in my shop window.
Yeah, you know,
is what
fills
my ego. Ego is a very important thing. Of ego is a super important part of function of nature.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I wouldn't have a fucking clue what you are.
Right. Yeah.
you won't have a window in which to put yourself.
Well, okay. So I think that definitely helps clarify things for me. And then it's like, okay, so what it is we can have an ego, but still maintain a connection to infinite awareness, right?
Yeah.
So it's this disconnection from infinite awareness. That's the issue, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that's what David Icke talks about. And I'm in the middle of one of his books. And it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I know that guy. He's real cosmic.
Yeah, he's quite out there. But yeah, it's quite an intense book.
Mm-hmm. What one?
Phantom Self. Yeah. Talks about this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it begs the question, is like, what do you want to fill your localized field of consciousness with and display to the world or give to the world? Or
totally. It's a very important thing to be aware of, that even when you drive down the street, for example, and you see all these billboards and logos and stores, for example, that's you're feeling that your consciousness is like sucking that into the subconscious.
Yeah.
Right. Or rather it's being sucked into your subconscious mind, and it stays there. It's like recorded. And same when, you know, we're just walking on the street or we're talking and there, you could have other people's energy in your field that I pick up on without you having to communicate anything to me, because I just feel it.
Mm.
Right. So there are other levels of reality that affect us, even, you know, beyond language.
Mm.
I should say.
Yeah, definitely. There's all sorts of vibrations going around, sound, light, and all the invisible ones that we haven't put a name on yet, but we call them feelings.
Mm.
I think it's really important to discern what the ego is for me, because I think it's so misunderstood, and it's actually not helping us move forward in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What would help us move forward is like converse about what we're feeling our ego with.
I like that. That's really interesting.
Donald Trump, his ego is not the problem. His ego is a window. It's just glass. The problem is the severity of the impressions or the karma or the cause and effect energy he's received over the years, stored in his anatomy, and is filling his fucking glass box full of and projecting out into the world.
Right.
That's the problem. It's not the fucking ego. It's the
ego in your mind is really kind of like the capsule.
Yeah,
like
capsule, the body. It's a glass capsule of your body.
Is it okay? Yeah, right. Because it's see through, so it allows the whatever light you store.
Yeah.
To be projected out into the world,
and we need it like we need air, right. Because if it wasn't there, I wouldn't have. We would just be one,
right?
The fucking universe would just go.
It's all unified, yeah.
Unity.
So you need to have some kind of contrast to differentiate between the individual nodes of the grid.
Exactly, the different nodes. You're a different node. I'm a different node.
Right.
That's the whole point of existence, is wanting to experience itself.
Okay, well, I think that's... Yeah, I totally agree with that. Mm. And I think that's a strong way to describe it.
Yeah. And I just think it forces us or puts us in a position to take responsibility.
That's definitely something for me to think on on later, but I appreciate that. That's cool.
I think because it puts us in the position of what can we take responsibility for. And I feel like it's a more layered, I don't know. I think I feel like there's fads in certain spiritual teachings as well. Mm-hmm. And there's things that come and go and people don't really... like it's like with any dogma or religion, it's less about the direct experience and facilitating someone's direct experience with supreme intelligence and more about putting my idea of what I've downloaded onto them and building lots of people to follow. Because we know that's true of religion. Fuck.
Mm. Yeah. Have you ever been religious?
Yeah, man. I grew up in a cult.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
24. Yeah.
That's a thing.
So very religious.
Wow. That's crazy.
But let's wrap, because it's been a great conversation.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's
the cult thing is we could do a whole other podcast on that. I'm sure you've talked about it.
Yeah I've talked about it on previous podcasts.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
Yeah, well, thanks so much, man,
for absolutely
all your sharing, all your knowledge.
It was an adventure.
And where can people check you out and follow your stuff?
Sure. If you're curious about learning more about VRLA, you can go to virtualrealityla.com. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn more about Mindshow, it's mindshow.com. We're on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. And for, I guess, you're curious about me personally, I am on Twitter at Cosmo Scharf, S-C-H-A-R-F. And yeah.
And Instagram?
As well as Instagram. Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Namah fucking stay.
Yeah.